everybody, and welcome to a Gem of a Secret podcast. My name is Coco Gem Holiday, and at this time, I have an announcement for everybody. We are back, but instead of we, it is just a me. Donna has decided that she wants to keep her life a little bit more private, so I'm going to be continuing the podcast moving forward solo. And the way that it's changed a little bit is we are still going to be doing interviews, but instead of just kind of talking about world events, I'm also going to be processing things that have happened to me in my life because I feel like it'll give you more insight into who I am as a person, but it also might help you guys a little bit more with some of the things that I want to talk about in my own personal life. So let's go ahead and get started. So this last week here in Portland, Oregon, and I am currently right now as this episode is airing at the Austin International Drag Festival, and I'm hoping to do some interviews while I'm here. So this week in Portland, there was a huge scandal about a drag queen who wore a dress with a lot of different slurs on it from different groups of people, but there also was the N-word written on the back of the dress. The pictures have gone viral. Hopefully pretty much every single person has known about the story at this point. And all I can say is I have a lot of thoughts about this incident. So as the word that was written on the dress, obviously the N-word, and I am a black person, I decided to take a little bit of a deep dive into how that actually made me feel versus like the community response to the incident happening. So on my end, so let's talk about it this way. So whenever I see that word just in general, and I wrote about this online, that word makes me feel so small in certain capacities. Even when I read it, it also makes me feel othered. And because the person who was wearing the dress isn't black, it makes me feel like, I don't know, it just feels targeted too. Like when you're writing something to do a number where you're wanting to express yourself by wearing a dress that like has all these words that hurt you and you want to rise up because she's doing the song Rise Up. It's like, that wasn't really her oppression to talk about. And what's really hurtful about that moment too is I think there wasn't any consideration taken into like communities that might actually see that word. Like I think of it like a Confederate flag, like waving at a kid's park, right? You don't know who necessarily is going to see it. You don't know how it's going to make them feel. You don't know how they're going to respond to it. And I felt very much the same way. And I think also making a buck off of the oppression of other people, because you know she's getting tipped during the number. And I think that is also what makes me feel icky inside, because I'm like, you're making a buck off of somebody else's oppression. Like making a buck off of your own journey, how you've rose above like all of the issues that's happened in your life, like that's one thing. But then making a buck off of somebody else's oppression, like that kind of feels really icky to me in a lot of different ways. The secondary issue with this that came up in the community is that there were people at the drag show who didn't necessarily stop her from doing this. The producers and the venue and even people in the audience. And a lot of people in the community, myself included, have kind of called people to be more accountable to those actions around them. Now, I will admit this, as a drag artist, like I've been in the dressing room 1,500 times and like I don't always pay attention to what's going on around me. I don't necessarily read the words of people's dresses. I don't look at like how the headpiece is like supposed to match this garment or these shoes, or the shoes are stoned in a way that's supposed to match the earrings. Like I don't pay attention to that stuff because you're trying to get ready for your own stuff. So I do give the girls in the show a lot of grace because of that. We all don't pay attention, but then I did see a photo that was released online that this same dress is a dress that she also took meet and greet photos in. And that also spoke to me loudly, because I don't necessarily think, like during the meet and greet, I'm also not necessarily looking at people's clothing. I'm looking at the camera in front of me. So I do give a little bit of grace in that. But once the issue of the dress came to light, I would have hoped to see a lot more people from the cast speaking up, saying like, yeah, that was a bad call. Like, you know, in that capacity, like this is a bad call. And the thing is, I know I wrote, we have a special group called Drag on Demand in Portland that is a private group for drag artists and producers to like talk about things that are outside of the public eye. And one of the questions I had asked in there was, would you have spoken up? As a black person in the community, I want to feel safe. I want to feel like these people that I work with that are essentially colleagues in the same business would have said something if it was something that was as bad as it was. And a lot of people actually said that they would have said something. And I've actually had a lot of people reach out and talk to me about the situation, being like, yeah, like I wouldn't maybe have known what to say, but I feel like I would have said something. Just recently, the venue itself put out a message regarding the incident. I'm going to put the message up on our website, agemofasecretpodcast.com. But essentially, it says, "Dear valued guests and community members, we'd like to express our sincerest apologies for the inappropriate verbiage written on our performance dress during our recent drag brunch. We understand that this has caused offense and discomfort to our guests and community members, and we deeply regret any negative impact it has caused. The intent of the performance was to empower people and to bring awareness to hate. However, the performer has recognized that the delivery of this message was inappropriate and offensive. They have taken full responsibility for this mistake. As an establishment, Night Deposit Whiskey Library had no knowledge of the wardrobe for this performance. This will be changing." And it does go on to just further apologize and talk about the duty of the space and the producer. So keep in mind, just for those of you out there in the community who are listening to this podcast, there is the breakdown of how drag shows usually happen is usually there's a producer, there is a host, an MC, there's a cast, and then there, of course, is a venue. Sometimes they can be all three the same things. Or usually what happens is the host or MC is usually the producer. Sometimes there is a producer who might not even do drag who will bring in an MC to help curate a show, and then they book the cast. So there is a different kind of ways that this can flow. It sounds like the person who wrote this online publicly was Vincent DeFrancisco, and they are a bartender at the bar and the producer of the show. However, they're not like the host and MC of the show is what it seems. And so this person who wore the dress, which is Ivana Fusion, it's very publicly known at this point. They said basically in this that they, well, I'll go ahead and read it. It says, "After much conversations between the performer and management, they have decided that the performer will be taking a break for performances with them. They will be taking this time for personal growth and learning." I don't necessarily love judging apology messages. It's really hard to get the right words out there. It's really hard to navigate these situations when it's racially charged because no apology is going to work for everybody. No apology is going to be the best for everybody. No apology is going to literally make the situation go away. You can only do the best you can. So the way that I take this apology is it is a little bit lackluster in the sense of what I would have preferred is that they said, "This was so racially charged in a really negative way, and the performer has been wearing this dress for a very long time. I would have said we've severed ties with this performer. Like, we love what they brought to us, but we made a really grand misstep. And they've been wearing this dress for so long that we needed to sever ties." That's probably what I would have went ahead with it. But as I'm reporting this situation for all of you, I don't necessarily want to be too biased in the sense of how people choose to respond to these incidents when they're like directly involved in the sense of the producer and the venue. Like they're still a business, right? There are other people at the business that need to pay their bills to keep their lights on. For the business to actually stay in business. And so, like, they're doing the best they can without seeming like they're just throwing somebody to the wolves. Because remember, this was a relationship beforehand, right? This was a partnership between the venue and the cast and the host and MC. So, that's just a couple of things that I wanted to go off of there. Then, some of the cast members, which is another side of the coin, have finally started speaking out against what was happening. There was a lot of, "I'm sorries, I didn't see it. If I did see it, I would have said something," which is honestly that all I was expecting from any member of the cast. Like that's because I've been in situations, and I'll speak about this personally, where I don't know how to speak up, where I don't know how to confront a situation. I had actually posted a comment saying, "When I see that word, I get really uncomfortable, but then what happens is I don't know what to say." Like, I don't know if I didn't have a good relationship with the producer or the performer who was wearing it, I don't know if I would have said something right away. I would have hoped that I would have kept them from going on stage, like, "Hey, girl, you can't wear that." Like, there's apparently this was an all ages venue for this specific show, so it's just really icky in a lot of different ways that, I just really don't want black folks to have to have their days disrupted because performative activism is getting in the way of like the message that the performer was even trying to do. Because they could have wrote words on themselves that affected them personally. That's how you do it. When you write stuff that's affected other groups of people, you're not allowed to speak for us. Like, we want you to show up for us, but you can't speak for us, and you can't make a buck off of our oppression, as I said earlier. So the saga has moved to where now people around the country kind of know about it. Like, it's kind of getting national news. And this performer, of course, is getting canceled in their own way. And I don't believe in cancel culture in any capacity. And I know by the nature of even right talking about it on this podcast, it sounds like I'm adding more fuel to the fire. But really, what I want to do here is have these conversations that are difficult to have in communities that are predominantly white. Now, Portland isn't necessarily predominantly white when it comes to the performer scene. There's a lot of POC entertainers that exist and live in Portland, and it's up for us to have these difficult dialogues and conversations. I've been wondering for a long time now that in Portland, it seems like as woke as we pretend to be, and I do mean the word pretend to be, we have a really hard time having difficult conversations that we really should be having. So I know that in this regard, like the conversation's out there, it's already happening, but things like this happen all the time. A friend of mine, Percocex, they are a drag artist that doesn't live in Oregon. They're very, very talented. And they had actually put like out a rule book that basically said something along the lines of, hey, like, yeah, this sucked, but also these other things kind of sucked along with this. And I added to the conversation by saying, you know, the one way that you can really support POC artists is if you also show up to our gigs. Portland has a couple of predominantly, not predominantly, like all POC shows, just a couple of them. And those shows are sometimes really poorly attended. Not because they're not marketed or advertised well. The people who are running the shows are really well known in the community. It's like a really great experience. And they're not well attended, but some of the all white, and I do mean all white shows where every single person in the cast is white, those shows are well attended. And so, like, they also brought up about how when, you know, people don't bleep out the N-word in mixes. And, or how, when you book black people in your shows or POC folks in your shows, like, let them do ballads, let them do whatever kind of music they would like to do instead of just having it be the woo girl number where they have to, like, perform, like, a 5-minute mix to Beyonce. And that's nothing against Beyonce. I personally love Beyonce. But it also gets kind of old and tiring when you have to consistently put that best foot forward. And so that was another part of this conversation that I think is really important for all of us to hear. So what I would encourage everybody to do out there who's listening to the podcast today is that if you see something, say something. That was a lot of a friend of mine, Kimber K. Shade, who runs Demand Drag, actually said that if you see something, say something. Because what happens is, and we have national attention on our community, negative national attention on our community for something that could have easily been a tap on the shoulder saying, hey girl, I don't think that's the best idea. And as we move forward from this incident, I hope that we learn something. I hope that we learn how to be better stewards of this information, especially when it involves people of color. Because, like I said before, you're not really allowed to speak for us. And our experiences are so different, wildly different. Like, this is literally the definition of collective black disapproval. We want to feel safe in our own environments. We want to feel safe in our communities. Yeah. So, as we transition into the break, I know I normally used to say, well, Don, I forgot to ask, how are you doing? But instead of doing that, I'm going to ask listeners, how are you doing?
It's a podcast.
Check it out.
Tune into what they tell you podcast.
Check it out.
Okay, listeners, so we're back. I wanted to switch gears on you a little bit and talk about a subject that I think is really important for especially queer folks to hear. And a lot of you know that I am happily partnered and I've had ups and downs when it comes to relationships. And so I wanted to have this discussion about this phrase that I've heard so often, and I heard it recently again from a friend, and I just think it's something that we really need to unpack and dissect. Have you ever been in that position where you're feeling anxious about your relationship, and you ask your partner, do you like me or do you love me? And then you get a response. Has anybody ever gotten that response? Hey, I love you. Sorry, do you still love me? And they go, well, Of course I do. I wouldn't be with you if I didn't. And it's that I wouldn't be with you if I didn't. Or something from one of my past relationships. I said, do you really want to be with me? And they said, I wouldn't be with you. Of course I'm your boyfriend. I wouldn't be with you if I didn't want to be. And I just think that that's such a negative spin on something that's supposed to help somebody with their anxiety. Like, really, what somebody's looking for, and I am a person who lives with a lot of anxiety, especially when it comes to love and relationships. And so, whenever I ask my partner nowadays, I'm like, do you love me? And they say, of course. They said, yes, I want to be with you always. Things like that, things that are affirming. And I've been noticing in queer relationships, like, we just don't take enough kindness and caring to each other when it comes to how we receive each other. Now, I know that there's the other side of the coin where people are like, I just don't want to be in a relationship with somebody who's so anxious all the time. I don't want to be in a relationship with somebody who has to constantly question why I'm with them. And I think that people need to take a step back and recognize that reassurance isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like being able to go up to your partner and be like, hey, like, I don't know, I just feel like something's just kind of changed with us. Shouldn't be like, of course you feel that way. So you must have done something. Did you cheat? It's like, no, it's like, I have anxiety. I want to just know that you like being with me. I want to know that something hasn't changed, or it's also a great time to have a dialogue or an open dialogue about something that may or may not be happening, right? Like, especially if the partner's like, oh, yeah, actually, like, I've gotten trouble at work and I've been kind of thinking about it a lot and it's seeping into my personal life. Like, that's the discussion, that's the dialogue, right? And so, what's also been happening with this conversation is I've noticed that people get used to being treated negatively. I have a lot of friends in my life who they accept, like, I think it's from Perks of Being a Wallflower. They accept the love they think they deserve. And this love that they think they deserve is less than, to where they're treated poorly. And they don't recognize it as being poor. They recognize it as, like, oh, that's just how they are. And I remember even telling a friend recently, just like, that's not how that's supposed to happen. And they're like, well, I know. And I was like, no, you should hear this. You deserve better than that. And don't ever think that you are less than that, because then you're going to keep being in relationships where you will find people who are literally perpetuating the stereotype that you've even placed upon yourself. And nobody wants to be in a relationship like that. No one. So I want to give you guys some advice. Go for the relationship that you want versus the relationship that you think you can have. Go for the person who fills your needs and your wants. I gave this advice recently. I was like, sometimes queer people, especially gay men, will just go for just what they want, but not what they need. And so the side of this conversation is go for what you want and what you need. If you want the guy who's a gym rat, and they cook well and they have a good job and they have a car and like what and whatever, whatever, and you're physically attracted to them, go for that. But then also go for your needs. Go for somebody you're like, oh, I need somebody who's going to reassure me when I'm anxious. Go for somebody who you're like, I like to be the big spoon. So go for somebody who just needs to be the little spoon. Go for the person who is going to treat your mom well. Go for the person who, if you make a mistake, they will challenge you to be better, but they will comfort you in your wrongness. Like, go for the person who isn't necessarily a unicorn. Everybody keeps saying that, like, certain relationships are just like, that's a unicorn. That doesn't happen. That doesn't exist. Like, and you start just like chipping away at the things that you're like, oh, no, I can't deal with that. I can't deal with that. I can't deal with that. The thing is, go for what you want and need. Just sometimes it doesn't come in the packaging that you want it to be in, right? Like, I will say that I think it's a really toxic concept to talk about the friend zone. The friend zone is a thing, but not the way that most straight men tend to use it. Like, yes, like women and men should be able to be friends without it being like, oh yeah, one of them wants to sleep with the other one or get with the other one. But there is sometimes when somebody will get all of their emotional and sometimes even romantic and sexual needs from a friend, and that friend wants something more from them. And they're like, well, and then they'll even talk to them about people they're interested in to the person that they're giving all this romantic attention to. And I think that that is really wrong. I call that having your cake and eating it too. You can't be on the prowl for your next new love when somebody is providing you all the love that you would need to be happy. So take kindness and caring into that equation. And then going back to your wants and needs and finding love and in a relationship. This is what I have to say to that. Like, recognize that your needs should prevail over your wants. Like, I really need a person who treats me well. I need a person who is a go-getter because I'm also a go-getter. I need a person who complements my life. Like, you, and then also there is this thing out there where people feel like they have to be the best version of themselves to start dating. Like, which is so weird. Like, why would you want to be the best version of yourself consistently when we know that's nearly impossible? And I know that there's a phrase about like, well, I just want to be okay. Like, and I don't want to have to lean on another person to make me okay. Being like, that doesn't mean you have to be alone. It just means that when you start dating somebody, you have to be authentic to the journey that you're on. Being like, oh yeah, like, you know, I went through a really bad breakup a couple of years ago, and I'm still working through some of the trauma in that. But I'm really open to the idea of just meeting some new people and like seeing where it goes. Because not everybody's supposed to be Mr. Right or Mrs. Right. Like, it's supposed to be this phrase I heard in college, be like, sometimes looking for Mr. Right now, and sometimes they become Mr. Right. So going back to the reason I brought this all up, part of this podcast is going to be turning into me giving advice to you all out there, and you can take it or you can leave it. I found a lot of success in love, and I found a lot of heartbreak with love. And I think it's really important in queer relationships that we could have somebody to talk to. Like, it just seems like we didn't have a guidebook. We all saw the viral meme that went around that, you know, queer kids didn't start dating into their 20s when straight kids were dating in their teenage years. And so they kind of are a little bit more emotionally stable when it comes to how they're dealing with things. And I think there's some validity to that. I didn't get my first boyfriend until I was like, what, 20, 21, something like that. And it was tumultuous in every capacity of the word. And I thought that that's how it was supposed to be. And I'm like already formed in the brain a little bit. And I went down a bad rabbit hole. And I even knew what I wanted, but I definitely didn't really consider about what I needed. And I need somebody who's so kind. I need somebody who checks their anger at the door. And as much as somebody might say, well, I need that too, but like, I need somebody who checks their anger. I mean, somebody who stubs their toe and they don't slam a cabinet door. I need somebody who stubs their toe, screams obscenity, and then gets back to being kind. And I know that that sounds like probably really hard to do, but I'm a person who kind of shies away from anger in every capacity. So that's why, going back to why I even started this, when I said the phrase of like, when somebody says, hey, do you love me? And it's like, well, I wouldn't be with you if I didn't want to be. I'm going to always choose the person who'd be like, yeah, of course I do. You mean everything to me. So hopefully that gave you guys something to think and think about, or, you know, opened your eyes to some things that are happening in your own life. It's been really great to talk to you guys again. I really miss this podcast, and I'm going to keep doing this weekly. Every week we should have episodes releasing on Thursday. Bye. Has been another episode of the Gem of a Secret podcast. The host of the Gem of a Secret podcast is Coco Gem Holiday. You can follow her at Coco Gem Holiday on Instagram, COCOJEM Holiday. The music for today's episode is provided by Touche Douche and Party Favors. You can follow them respectively on Instagram at Touche Likes Beef and at Party Favors Music. We film our episodes to be released every Thursday. Please, lastly, visit our website at thegemofasecretpodcast.com. That is AJEM of a Secret Podcast.